Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday morning, September the 3rd, Labor Day. And it's time for our State Capitol Report. No rest for the weary. Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson is with us to tell us what state lawmakers have been up to in the past week and what's on the docket for the week to come. And we welcome your questions about the status of an item in the state budget or a piece of legislation or your comments on whether or not it's bothering you that there isn't a state budget in place in the state for the state of Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sean Johnson joins us in the studio. Good morning and happy Labor Day, Sean.
Thanks, Joy. Good morning.
Yeah, thanks for not taking the day off.
Sure.
And presumably lawmakers have the day off today unless they're, you know, riding in some Labor Day parade or something like that.
Yeah, you know, there's been talk sometimes at this conference committee that's negotiating the budget that we need to start meeting 6 days a week, just Monday through Saturday, be here every day. But they're only here on Wednesday, as far as we know right now.
Is that in that this week, only
right.
Wednesday is
and
what's scheduled?
It was scheduled. Only one time last week. And at this point, the meetings aren't too productive. So you got to wonder what more meetings would do.
You know, I've been hearing some grumbling. I think it's mainly from the Republican side of the aisle, grumbling that Governor Doyle isn't doing enough to somehow crack the whip. Is that happening?
Well, there's been grumbling on both sides. Mm-hmm. And I think the governor... his role in these budget negotiations so far has been, at least to our eye, more of a public one where he goes around the state and meets with people who feel like they'd be hurt under the Republican budget and says, look, guys, get your act together. And he was doing that last week. He made a few appearances around the state with education professionals, including one in Milwaukee, where he tried to put pressure on Republicans and Democrats to get to work on the education budget.
It is time for the grown-ups to emerge here, and it is time for the game playing to stop, and it is time for people to sit down and work through this budget.
And did that work?
I think it kind of bugged some people. Mm-hmm. It hasn't, you know, it may not be, you may not see any tangible work product mm-hmm. out of the committee yet, but I would imagine that if you've got the governor going around the state, he can command a real audience when he travels mm-hmm. to these different communities. People are going to listen to him, and I would imagine that it gets lawmakers' attention. It probably drew their ire a little bit last week. You heard Senator Scott Fitzgerald, who's on this conference committee that's negotiating the budget, sort of shot back at the governor. And he said the reason that negotiations are stalled right now is that the governor's not at the table. And so he called on Doyle to cancel his upcoming trip to China so he could be at the conference table with legislative leaders.
In case anybody in the audience is wondering, nothing was accomplished here today and nothing will be accomplished here today because this is nothing more than just a game that's being played. And the problem still exists just as it did on the first day, and that is that the governor is not engaged.
Hmm. And yeah, well, and it was an interesting speech because watching these committees, there have been 9 of these meetings right now. It's mostly people talking past one another. It doesn't feel like real negotiations at this point.
Yeah, but is that fair, Sean? I mean, isn't it supposed to be this legislative conference committee that comes up with the compromise, and it's not really the governor's role right now to be recrafting a budget that he had already submitted to the legislature?
Yeah, and that's what you heard from Assembly Minority Leader Jim Cruiser. He represents Assembly Democrats on this budget panel. He said there's no reason for the governor to be at the table every day, especially that lawmakers haven't really gotten their act together on their own.
On every little item, we can't be running to the governor and say, we need your permission. When have you ever done that in your life? Never. Don't expect it to happen now. Let's put the packages together. Let's get a product together, and then if he's got a major problem on an issue, well, we got to maybe go back and refigure it out. But until we get our act together, he doesn't need to cancel his plans.
Yeah, he's not, the governor isn't going to cancel his trade trip to China, is he, Sean?
No, I don't think the governor's going to buckle under the pressure from a couple of legislative Republicans. And as Representative Cruiser went on to say, you know, I'm sure there's a, he called it a red phone in Susan Goodwin's office, Susan Goodwin being the governor's chief of staff, and said there's plenty of people here who can speak on his behalf. And if there's a deal where you need to talk to him in person and get his assurance, I'm sure they have phones in China and we can work something out.
So this group, this committee meets this Wednesday, and that's all we know so far.
That's
huh?
all we know so far. Mm-hmm. The leaders on the Senate side, Majority Leader Judy Robson for the Democrats, and on the Assembly side, Speaker Mike Hipsch for Republicans, they're meeting some on their own behind closed doors. We don't know exactly what they're discussing. We do know they're talking about the education budget and that they are working on some sort of education budget on their own. But we don't know the details. At least publicly, this committee, that this conference committee is meeting about once or twice a week, and it's basically speeches back and forth.
Did I see a headline that the governor, when he said, let's get to work and quit being children, did he say that if there's not a budget very soon, that property taxes will go up by a certain amount?
Yeah, that's and that's because these property tax limits that they put into the last budget are going to expire. Mm-hmm. And so if the legislature doesn't act, property taxes will go up. Also on the school's budget, if the legislature doesn't act and doesn't approve new state funding for schools, schools are going to have to lean real hard on the property taxpayers if they want to see any kind of increase. And so you would see, I think you could call it a little bit of chaos in terms of the number of referenda you'd have to have in Wisconsin. I think there'd be a lot of districts that would be hurting if there was no new state aid at all.
Yeah. Well, let's check our weather forecast and then also check in with listeners. You're the voters. Who do you blame for this budget impasse? Do you think this is a lot of game playing by this conference committee? Do you think the governor should be somehow more involved in this process? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, Labor Day, September the 3rd. Stay tuned. Coming up after 8, we'll continue our annual tradition of having David Newby in during the 8 o'clock hour, president of the Wisconsin AFL-CIO, to talk about the status of labor in the state of Wisconsin and to talk about many issues affecting workers and why David Newby says health care is the top issue. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Reporter, on this Labor Day. This is our State Capitol Report. Every Monday during this hour, we see what's going on in state politics, what our state lawmakers and other government officials are up to, and we will be checking in also with a professor and director of the School for Workers at the University of Wisconsin Extension. Coming up after 7:30, the School for Workers, one of the items in the state assembly's budget that is targeted for elimination. At least the assembly budget recommends cutting all funding, all state funding, for the UW Extension School for Workers. And we'll talk with its director coming up after 7:30 about why that shouldn't happen, presumably. Sean, no, there has been no progress whatsoever on there's been no agreement on anything in the state budget, has there?
No official agreement on anything except for stuff that they'd already agreed on, stuff that had passed both houses. They agreed to that pretty early on in this process, but this committee was set up to to resolve differences, and so far, no. Yeah. That could just be my answer for every question.
Right. So the biggest difference is
the biggest difference. You just look in dollar terms. We're still talking budgets that are $10 billion apart, and the Senate Democrats included a universal health care plan in their budget. That would be paid for through a new payroll tax in Wisconsin. Assembly Republicans want nothing to do with that, mm-hmm. and they passed a budget that takes out all the tax increases proposed by Senate Democrats and by the governor. And, you know, even if you take that that health care proposal from Senate Democrats off the table, so to speak, even if they say that, OK, well, this isn't the year for it. The governor's not necessarily 100% behind this, judging by his comments. Republicans definitely aren't behind it. Maybe this isn't the year. Even if you take that off the table, there's still some real differences between what Republicans want and what Governor Jim Doyle wants. Remember, they were complaining about his budget for several months, about the programs that he wants to expand and the taxes that he includes in his budget on oil, hospitals, mm-hmm. and cigarettes.
Yeah. I heard last week that there was also some talk about whether there should be some cuts in the Medicaid program as long as we don't have a state budget in place. What's that all about?
This is another area where the governor, you know, as the chief of the executive branch, sort of, I guess, moving his weight around. His administration secretary sent a letter to the Department of Health and Family Services and directed the department to come up with a plan to cut 20% from Medicaid, just in case, because these budgets are so far apart, and the budget that's drawn up by Assembly Republicans does not include the cigarette tax and does mm-hmm. not include the hospital tax. Those are both mm-hmm. taxes that are designed to bring in money from Medicaid, that is, you know, to cover health care costs for the poor, elderly, and disabled. He said, you need to look for these cuts, because if there's no budget in place, money's going to run out for this program on March of 2009. That bugged some Republicans who said, look, there's no way we're going to turn our back on these people. And among them was Representative Katie Rhodes. And she, you know, this is one of the first comments was made at the conference committee this past week. She was pretty irked by the move of the administration.
I really, really, really am disappointed that this is what we do now, is go out and scare the people who depend on us the most. And I hope that we are able to counteract that message, because I don't think any of you here would ever walk away from them.
And Democrats responded, it's the executive branch. This is the governor. It's his job to plan for these possible cuts. And the fact is, if lawmakers don't act, which has been a possibility that's raised, that we'd have no new budget and this old budget just carries over into next year, these benefits would run out in a couple years. So got to be looking at these things. Yeah.
Are the lawmakers on the conference committee close to anything? Are they, I mean, we talked about the major differences, but are there any areas where they're like, well, yeah, we're close here as long as we get rid of those big items or something. I mean, is there progress anywhere?
You see some areas where you think, boy, that could be a compromise. Like Democrats floated a plan a little earlier in this process that included most of what they wanted for the University of Wisconsin and offered Republicans their tuition freeze, which is a mm-hmm. big piece of their university budget. And I wouldn't go so far as to say they're close on that, because, you know, it's something it was mostly stuff the Democrats wanted in that package. But yeah, you start to see little areas where one side or the other might be willing to bend a tiny bit.
I hear a story, though, on just this morning, Sean, that you might have put together on Friday, that was that maybe they're close on renewable energy, of all things,
yeah.
but not on, you know, they don't like the garbage dumping stuff.
Yeah, well, renewable energy is something both sides want to say we're supporting, you know, drumming up sales for corn to mm-hmm. Produce ethanol and using our forest products to produce ethanol. And so renewable energy is something both sides can get behind. I think where they differ, Democrats insist that they're really close on this, but I think where they differ, and it's fairly big, is that part of the way that Democrats would pay for these renewable energy initiatives is to tax the dumping of garbage, increase how much it costs to dump a ton of garbage in Wisconsin. So these waste, mm-hmm. these major waste haulers end up paying for that. The Democrats want to more than triple the fee on the tipping fee, they call it, and Republicans don't want anything to do with that. They call it a tax and dump in your garbage.
Yeah. What about the state employees who I've seen on television coverage, and you spoke about here before, that are maintaining a steady presence at this at these conference committee meetings for the state budget. Are they getting what they want?
I think they're getting noticed. You don't see a lot of protests like this one. I mean, normally when a group wants something at the Capitol, they come, they hold a big rally, they make some noise, it's in the news for a day or two, and then, you know, it's potentially forgotten. Here you've had members of Ask Me holding a vigil at the Capitol and the Rotunda every day. There's these members walking around in their green Ask Me shirts carrying protest signs and taking direct aim at Assembly Republicans for the budget that they passed. Every day the conference committee meets, these employees are sitting up there making their presence known. And so recently you've had a couple of Republican lawmakers who were not at the table sending letters to their leadership saying, don't cut this compensation reserve. This is the pot of money that's set aside for state employee wages. So it's micro progress, I guess. You know, it's tiny bits of movement, and I think the state employees make the case that we vote. There's a lot of us in your district, and you probably don't want to make us angry.
Yeah, and I was talking to my guests during the week in review, and they were both noting that I think it was Senator Ellis and someone else were annoyed at the lack of progress on a state budget too, and they were proposing take all the policy stuff out of the state budget. Are there a lot of policy items in the state budget?
There's a huge amount of policy items in this budget. You know, for example, on the Democratic side, I'll just you know, getting rid of the QEO, which is the cap on teachers' raises. On the Republican side, getting rid of the state's moratorium on new nuclear construction, or the ban on heated sidewalks in Wisconsin, renaming the highway to Ronald Reagan Memorial Highway. Lots of stuff in there for both sides. And I got to figure that a lot of that will be taken out. Those are sort of, you know, to give each side a little bit more bargaining power at the table. I don't know that that's what's holding us up, though. I think there's bigger differences than that.
Yeah. Also, last week, in non-budget news, there were some hearings.
There was actually a hearing at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there are a handful of hearings every week. It's mostly slowed down, but there was this committee that looked at a plan that would let people sue if they're the victim of gender-based wage discrimination. Mm-hmm. And Assembly sponsor Christine Sinicki said that would give teeth to the fair wage laws that are already on the books in Wisconsin.
If a business is looking at having to pay out damages to their employee that they discriminated against, they're going to think twice about it. They're going to think twice about it, and that's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. That's going to have a hard time passing the Republican-controlled Assembly just because it adds another area of law where you could sue for punitive damages, and Republicans generally think there's too much of that, and this plan, which has been around for several years, is probably not going to pass the Republican-controlled Assembly this year, but maybe the Democratic-controlled Senate.
Yeah. 30 seconds before the news break, anything else this coming up this week that is worth noting?
You know, the Budget Committee is going to meet, and we'll see if there's any more micro-progress. Mm-hmm. There's a Great Lakes Study Committee that's going to come up with some recommendations for water diversion, and the governor, I believe, is getting ready to leave for China.
All right, Sean. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, State Capitol Reporter. And we'll continue our state capitol report coming up after this check of the latest news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Labor Day, Monday, September the 3rd. It is 7:36. We continue our state capitol report this hour, examining one of the items in the disputed state budget that is causing some controversy. The assembly version of the state budget eliminates funding for the UW Extension School for Workers. And we will talk with the director and a professor with the School for Workers during this half hour about what it is, the mission of the School for Workers, and why this particular department serves the entire state of Wisconsin, and presumably why this department deserves state funding. We welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Neil DeClercq, professor and director of the School for Workers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and thanks for inviting me on this beautiful Labor Day.
It is a gorgeous Labor Day. You and the other members, staff members of the School for Workers, are a little anxious these days, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah, certainly.
Yeah. Was it a shock to you to notice in the assembly's version of the state budget that state funding for the School for Workers was specifically targeted for elimination?
Well, it was a bit of a shock. Not exactly a surprise, however. Our program has been controversial probably since its inception back in 1925. So we have had periodic efforts to investigate or question the validity of what we do.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. I was surprised to read that. 1925. Why has it been controversial since its inception?
Well, I think the whole notion of labor unions throughout American history has been an area of contention for varying factions, and we obviously, our mission is to work with workers in the state of Wisconsin are primarily labor union representatives, and they're the people who have been in the forefront of looking for economic social justice and promoting collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm. And tell us how the School for Workers goes about doing that.
Well, as you mentioned, we are a department within the UW Extension, and so our mission is to work with the workers of the state of Wisconsin. It's along the lines of the Wisconsin idea of extending the borders of the university to the borders of the state. And the university has decided since 1925, apparently, that this segment of Wisconsin society is in need of having educational opportunities.
Yes, and so again, how do you specifically go about addressing the educational opportunities for labor in Wisconsin?
Well, we run a number of programs, educational programs, throughout the state of Wisconsin. We target working groups, individual workers, as well as union representatives. We also provide educational opportunity to joint labor management groups around the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, and so what? I mean, you actually have a classroom type of programs where
sure.
where labor union members will come in and get education, or I mean, you're training future labor union leaders, or
exactly.
Yeah.
We run programs in the communities around the state. That's one of the models that we use. A typical program might be a 5 or 6 week, one night a week program for workers to attend in their local community. We also do short courses in Madison, on the Madison campus. We call those our residential programs. People will come to Madison for up to a week for intensive training, and then we'll provide other training opportunities in a variety of delivery modes depending on the needs of the clients. The residential programs, we have both open enrollment programs where we establish a topic like job evaluation or collective bargaining and invite people from around the state to come and participate. And then we also have residential programs that are sponsored by specific unions.
Yeah. Tell us why this is important in 2007 to maintain, to continue this type of education.
Well, I think most people would agree that education is important to people throughout their working lives, and working people need the opportunity to develop the skills and the knowledge in order to voice their rights and concerns in the workplace, and also to be represented where they choose to be represented by a labor union.
Yeah. Are you, taking a side on an issue that, in terms of advocating for laws to make it easier to form unions and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we are advocates in the sense that we are fulfilling our mission under the university's direction to provide the education and training to workers so that they have the skills and the abilities to make their voices heard in the society. And so that includes advocating for laws and regulations that would be to the benefit of that segment of the society.
Yeah. How much taxpayer dollars goes into the School for Workers programs?
We have about a little over $1 million budget, and a little under half of that is provided by the taxpayers through the money that's paid to the university that filters down to us. The other half of our budget is what we call program revenue, which is money that we derive from charging fees to our participants.
Mm-hmm. So if the $500,000 that comes from state taxpayers, if that were to be eliminated, what would it do to the School for Workers?
Well, I think it would have a very crippling effect on our ability to provide educational services around the state. We would obviously shrink considerably in personnel, and that's really what it is that provides this educational opportunity. That means that people in a lot of the communities around the state who have very limited opportunities to get education on the topics that we cover would be even more disadvantaged.
Yeah. How about just charging more money for these programs and trying to make up for it that way?
Well, the difficulty with charging more is the same with any business, if you would. There's a limit to the amount of resources available to workers and their unions to devote to educational opportunity.
Yeah. And the... So there is no other source of funding. It's either the program fees you charge for these programs or state taxpayer dollars.
Well, we do occasionally get grants mm-hmm. and contracts from different organizations, whether governmental or private organizations, to do some of the work that we do. In addition to the programming that I've been talking about, the fee generation program, as professors and a department within the university, we have an obligation to provide community service to the state, which is generally activities that are unfunded, unfee-funded, and they're partially subsidized by the money that is provided by the university.
Yeah. One of the critics of, the University of Wisconsin in general, but specifically regarding this cut, I believe it was Republican Representative Steve Nass, is quoted as saying that the mission of the UW Extension School for Workers is too narrow. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think the university has a lot of missions that it is trying to accomplish. Again, going back to that Wisconsin idea, serving different segments within the society. And I don't think that our particular mission is much narrower than some of the other missions that the university engages in. Certainly within Wisconsin's extension program, we have a number of good programs, excellent programs, that target different segments of the society for educational opportunity. For example, we have a mm-hmm. division of entrepreneurship and economic development, which has a number of activities that are at least partially funded by state dollars, and they focus on small business and entrepreneurial activity in the state.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Neil DeClercq, professor and director of the School for Workers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, UW Extension, actually. We are talking about the Assembly's version of the state budget that eliminates state funding for the School for Workers, which provides labor and working people education about labor issues. We wonder what you think, what questions you have. Do you think that this is a program, a department that deserves taxpayer funding? 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line for you. What do you think? A lot of you have the day off for Labor Day, but we invite you to call in with your questions about this program that provides education for workers, the School for Workers. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 11 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Labor Day, Monday, September the 3rd. You're listening to our State Capitol Report, and we are talking about proposed budget cuts for the UW Extension School for Workers. The Assembly's version of the state budget eliminates state funding for the School for Workers, and we're finding out from our guest in this half hour of the State Capitol Report why that would be a bad idea. He is Neil DeClercq, professor and director of the School for Workers, and we welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. He's also telling us about the mission of the School for Workers and what it does with those taxpayer dollars. And again, we welcome your input for him. He says the proposed budget cut, the total elimination of state taxpayer dollars, would be crippling to the mission of the School for Workers. And our first caller is Harold in Sparta. Hi, Harold. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I don't agree with this. Paying the taxpayer money for another program.
Well, this is it's a University of Wisconsin program that provides education on labor issues and for working people. Why don't you think that's worthwhile of taxpayer dollars?
I think what should be done is that they should start figuring out how they can cut some of these programs. Otherwise, they're going to tax themselves right out of business.
Well, he's not specifically addressing the content of your program, Neil DeClercq, but, a lot of us feel that we pay enough taxes and we got to cut back. Times are tough, we got to cut back. You want to just have a general response to that?
Sure. I think that the way we view this is that the department is providing a service that is actually contributing to the economic development of the state. I think the university at large is an excellent economic development engine for the state, and our role in that is to make sure that labor and management have the training for their workers that will enable those workers to function effectively within their organization.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 20% of our fee programming is done in these joint labor management programs that I mentioned earlier. And those are a good example, I think, of where both labor and management recognize the value of the education that we provide to their workers in order to make them more effective and functioning within the economy.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Harold, for the call. Wayne in Green Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Joy and Neil. I think it'd be a dirty shame if we lost this facility because and again, it's Republicans. I think it may be just a bargaining chip they threw on the table, and hopefully it'll fall off the table, and it'll be fully funded. I was a past labor leader. I've been retired more than 5 years now, but I worked a job, shift worker in that, and was also a union officer. And I was a school worker back in the early 80s, and I do remember Neil and Ken Miracle and George Hagelin. I don't know if they're still around or not, but that particular subject was about shift workers and the effects of shift work that it has on you. But we also used Ken Miracle in the mid-90s, both union and management, for a job adjustment at our plant, which he was very helpful in. And I'd hate to see that kind of resource gone because it's something we need. Of course, it's for the workers, and who cares about the workers these days? It's all about management, and wages go to management, and workers are just trying to hang on these days. So we definitely need that facility, and I hope that it is taken off the table and that we don't have a worry about, hey, when we need that kind of service, mm-hmm. that it's there for us workers.
I don't think you'll disagree with that, will you, Neil DeClercq?
No, and I appreciate those kind words from Wayne, and hope that he will someday perhaps come back to one of our other programs.
Yeah, thanks, Wayne, for the call. Why, Neil DeClercq, can't this type of a program and education be incorporated in the School for Business?
Well, I think that the interests that are being represented by the two organizations, the business school or the entrepreneurial development department, and the School for Workers are different. I think workers in some cases have their own set of interests that they're trying to advocate for and develop within the labor-management relationship. And I think that part of our advantage for a lot of employers who use our services is that we come to the labor-management arrangement with the confidence of the workers that we're there to make sure that not only are the employer's interests being heard, but also that the workers' interests are being represented as well.
Yeah. Bill in Bayview is with us now. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
I'm just going to submit the opinion that the school is probably woefully underfunded, and I'm picking up on what the gentleman just said. Let me point out that the schools around the state, the public schools around the state, have lavishly spent on schools of business. And schools of business are not the same as schools of labor. Labor has its own history, its own understanding about who it is, and its history is largely being forgotten because it's because we have become so business and so entrepreneurial oriented that we no longer think about labor as an entity in our society. It's sort of a detail.
Mm-hmm. Neil DeClercq, you want
to
react?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind having more resources to devote to our activities. We have a very busy schedule. Our faculty are extremely active around the state, doing not only the educational activities that I've talked about, but also doing some applied research and, as I mentioned, the community service activities that are important within the university.
How many faculty members or staff members do you have?
We have 7 faculty.
Mm-hmm.
We have 3 clerical staff, support staff, and then we have some part-time LTE mm-hmm. students.
Next, we go to Peter in Lake Geneva. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, I was just going to suggest that if we're going to cut schools at the University of Wisconsin, a reciprocal cut would be the School of Business. The School for Workers, and I think well-educated, trained union leadership helps business because it helps get through the negotiation process for contracts, helps workers become realistic about how they can negotiate and what items they can make progress on and come up with constructive programs.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, you're not going to disagree with that, Neil DeClercq.
Well, I'm not interested in seeing any of the university's programs eliminated. The business school serves a very important function within the state of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and it's obviously an important part of maintaining good-paying jobs that are stable within the communities within Wisconsin. Well, I also think that our program contributes to that goal as well. We're interested in making sure that workers have jobs to go to and that those jobs are well-paid and that there are good benefits provided and that they can be productive members of their communities around the state.
Yeah. Stacy and Racine, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I actually have kind of 2 questions to ask. The first question that I have is, I work full-time, my husband works full-time, and we pay for my schooling. I go to school part-time at night, and we pay for it ourselves. And we actually don't have any more money, I don't think, than anybody else, but we pay for it ourselves. My question is, I didn't understand that there was such a school for workers. Why, out of my taxes or my husband's taxes, are we paying for other people to go to school? Why don't they pay for it like we do?
Well,
just yeah, out of
right,
their
right.
own
I
pocket.
Mean, yeah, you pay some sort of fee for the education, don't you, Neil DeClercq, if you're taking one of these programs?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Most of our, almost all of our fee programs are fees that are charged to the participants themselves to participate in the training. And the money that the taxpayers put into the, our program helps to subsidize the operation. But a lot of schools operate that way, and I suppose different philosophical positions could be taken, but the tradition in this country has always been to have a public input into the educational system, whether it's the K-12 or the university college.
Yeah. Well, we need to leave it there. Our time is gone. A number of callers left online who want to also support you. We appreciate your time. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Joy.
Neil DeClercq, professor and director of the School for Workers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It's the UW Extension School for Workers, targeted for a total budget cut in one version of the state budget. We'll see what happens with the negotiating committee. Thanks to Karen Prager and to Cale Plowman for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.